Hey folks, Luke here, coming to you today with a bonus episode. Surprise! As I was wrapping up production on the finale episode, I suddenly remembered that after we finished that session, we stuck around and just had a chat about the campaign, and it turns out it was kind of fun and interesting, so I thought I would present it here. It's just about a half hour, and just thought it would be a fun bookend to the campaign, so I hope you enjoy it, and see you when I see you.
I want to start by nominating Luke for the Terrence Malick Award for, like, sort of existential sensorium storytelling there.
Yeah, that's great. That's some shit I've wanted to get to for a long time. It was very fun to let a lot of it out at once.
I think the Less Talkative Party probably would have... You probably could have got there like months ago.
It's not about the destination, it's the journey.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, yeah, I don't mean that in like finally I can say this. No, like I'm so pleased.
Now that we got to the destination, I kind of feel like it's about the destination.
Quite a destination. Like,
yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not, the DM does not need to respond to this one way or the other, but I would assume that if Palfrey is an ascendant, everybody else is too?
I got the sense that Suka was.
It definitely was.
Some conversation that I had some influence and was an ascendant as well.
Yeah.
That would explain your flashbacks.
Yeah.
I will laugh super hard if there is an ascendant that is not one of us and Gebetto is just some tool bag. I will be over the moon. He's just like,
I think Jiri is an ascendant.
Oh, he's something special.
I think it's
pretty great that Hemo was, you know, one of the under-delivering characters of the campaign based on dice rolls. But at the very end, Hemo's the one like levitating above everybody. Picture him kind of like a superhero from like one of the X-Men films, like Magneto. He's kind of like levitating there. And in all reality, he was one of the weak links most of the time.
I want to know how many of the Highlight soldiers think that you're the bad guy we've been fighting.
Get him out of the sky.
Hemo is much slept on, but I feel like mechanically speaking, Hemo is just getting to the point where, like, when we pick this back up, I think Hemo is going to be like recognized badass among the party. Like, he's got the goods.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll see.
Well, I was hoping I could trouble you guys just for like a little bit of like discussion, just because this is the first DMing experience I've ever had, and I would just love to like get some feedback. I would just be curious to know, like, what were folks' favorite moments or elements? What were your least favorite moments? Let's start with favorite. What were folks' like favorite moments or elements of the story?
I guess before we get into that, I'll say that when the museum came to life with Mojri, like that was unexpected. Like at that point, completely unexpected. And an interesting twist.
Cool.
I really like all the quirky, spontaneous stuff. Like the, all of a sudden I start screaming. Like, I really like that kind of play and that sort of unexpected, out of the box kind of stuff. So you threw so much of that in. And I like that, all that stuff that was just kind of oddball and off the, out of like the norm of what you would expect. I really enjoyed anytime that happened.
Cool.
The embryonic Umberly scene, like the battle leading up to it and the interactions therein, and the like consuming of the mage, that entire sequence was probably my favorite moment. That was
cool. We talk about it all the time.
It was visceral.
Yeah.
That was great. That was actually a really significant moment for me as a DM because none of that was planned.
Yeah.
And it was because I like had managed my time poorly and didn't have time to prep that week. And that was like way cooler than anything I thought I had written to that point. And especially like the one-on-one scene with Gebetto and Umberly, like none of that was written before. And I came away from that like, shit, that was great. I should write less. Like,
I feel like that's what every DM realizes at some point. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, this works super well. I really liked the memorable NPCs. Like Mode 3 is probably my favorite NPC I've ever encountered in any campaign. I also love Auriga. And then because I love mystery and conspiracy, I'm consumed with thoughts of Rigel at every waking moment. I just want to know what the subcommittee has planned. So I'm big into the mystery, like connecting the dots, sort of tracking down the clues kind of stuff that we get to do occasionally.
Cool.
I'll tell you the one that sticks with me a lot. I think we sort of slept on it at the time, but the test where you had to assassinate the mannequins, the sort of orator mannequin, that was so... on the one hand, it was like a somewhat silly is not quite the right word, but it's like a deliberately sort of artificial situation.
Yeah,
but it's also genuinely very creepy to think about being in this sort of funhouse created by these, you know what I mean? Like it was just very, it was really aesthetically interesting. And it was also a purely mechanical level, a really interesting chat, like a gameplay challenge, I think. Mm-hmm.
Which mostly fell on Nick's shoulders.
Yeah.
The musical, the whole theater production, that was awesome.
Like the arena battle
bit with
like, yeah.
That turned into like a performance and
like basically mocking your quest.
That was like the most prolonged sense of foreboding I've ever felt. Never kicked off in the way that we anticipated, I don't think.
Yeah.
So the whole time I was just like, what is happening? This is not what I prepared for at all.
Which like that, I always feel uncomfortable in moments like that where it's like, okay, like I've thought of a clever premise, but like, is it such out of left field that like you guys start to lose a sense of agency?
I don't know.
We
know for a fact that there are things that we fucked up, right? That there were things that you could have planned, or that you could have had some sense of what ought to happen, and we diverted it somehow. I guess I'm not sure that that's the case, but it feels like there were times where we did something and your reaction, which we could see on screen, suggested that we zagged when you expected us to zig.
Oh yeah, there's tons of that, yeah.
So, I mean, I have to assume that happened at on a larger scale also.
Yeah.
We zagged in a narrative way.
Oh yeah, for sure. I know it can be awkward to just say it to my face, but I would really appreciate to know where were the moments that dragged.
I would have a hard time pointing at an individual thing that dragged. And I think broadly speaking, things kept at a pretty good clip. I was actually a little, not really nervous, but I thought it was a possibility at the beginning of this campaign that with so many players using a fairly complicated set of rules in the grand scheme of sets of rules in 5th edition D&D, that we would really get bogged down. But combat moved really fast. I'm going to speak purely from my own preferences as a DM, but I think my inclination is generally to lean on the party a little bit more when it comes to like making a decision and doing things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my temptation is always, if there is a sense that people are sort of waffling about stuff, to like introduce a reason why you need to make a decision and act quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So to that extent, I think to the extent that things dragged, it's because we made them drag. And then if that's a problem, it's sort of incumbent on you to like pull us out of that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like, I think it was especially towards the beginning of the campaign, we were running into some like, okay, where do we go next kind of stuff. And I was definitely aware of that, but I took like for those earlier sessions, I took a very hands-off approach because it's also like a bunch of us are like kind of getting to know each other for the first time. So it's like, you kind of just got to like let it be rough for a minute to let the chemistry emerge. But yeah, point taken for sure.
There were a couple sessions where I wrapped up and I sort of felt like, well, that was really like 3 or 4 dialogue scenes that made up the entirety of a 2-hour session, which is not necessarily a problem, but it's also not a recipe for sort of pulse pounding in each session. Not that it necessarily has to be, but like if you want that, then yeah, that's, I mean, that's another thing. Like, you know, you're sort of thinking about where is the campaign going on the whole. And it's hard. It's a very compositional challenge to think, to think in terms of like, where's the campaign going? And then also zooming into like, okay, now what's the texture of this night going to be like? And what's this session going to feel like, the sort of contour of that? Like, that's hard. And like I said, broadly speaking, I think you did great, but left to our own devices, we will just like stick around and talk to each other in character for 2 hours.
I have a question. My memory is not the strongest. Did we ever encounter an enemy that we couldn't attack directly? Somewhere where we had to maintain distance?
There was something with a ghost.
Oh, physical contact. My basis for this question is, you know, Suka and I have that special combination weapon But we could never really use it because there was always somebody in melee combat with our.
I see what you're saying.
So we would have always done damage to our own party. I was hoping to break it out tonight, but this particular enemy, we just go fight him hand to hand. So if there was like an enemy that required us to not attempt to like surge and attack, or we had to more strategically indirectly attack the enemy, that would have been a totally different approach to combat. That would have been more for some different ways to attack, some different elements that could have been interesting.
Yeah.
There is a thing to that though, where like the majority at this point of our party is casters. I mean, like Palfrey wasn't, and like now, Pinlin can do some magic and I have magic. If at any point, you guys wanted to try that, you could always call us off. Be like, hey, put some space because it's going to get lit, you know? Like, I think we could have been more cohesive at times.
Yeah.
I think, and like that's something that comes with experience and like understanding synergies and like building character relationships both in combat and out of it. I think we did a lot of really great building in the general how our party interacts with each other. But there was never a point where I feel like we figured out a rhythm for fighting. It was just kind of a knockdown drag out every time.
Yeah.
I feel like my weakest link and what I plan to do a little homework on is designing combat scenarios. Well, for one thing, you guys never had to like run away. Like you always were able to find a way to victory.
It's super hard to balance something for a party of this size as well. Like the game is designed for four people, at most five, and we are beyond those means.
Yeah. Well, and I also like, I'm not super, super good at like memory retention of rules and stuff. So when we get into combat, like I start to feel like it's a lot, it's just like a lot for like my brain to track. So it's something I need to just like read up on.
Returning for a minute to the thing that Mike mentioned about that particular like attack that they have, I think I would venture to say this is in part a system issue, because with the system like fifth edition and the granularity of it, even in terms of like inventory tracking with the granularity that we do, in a sense, that's basically a recipe for the introduction of a whole bunch of Chekhov's guns. And I don't know that it's reasonable to expect oneself or a DM to fire all of those guns within a certain time, right? Like, that's, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, there's no need to be super comparative, but like in the previous campaign, which I was the DM of, I deliberately chose a really, really simple system. And I tried to kind of steer away from that a little bit because I was worried about having something that like was introduced and not paid off. And I'm sure I did have stuff that was introduced and not paid off. And actually, I think Luke did a great job of paying off the stuff that he introduced. But especially if you have a player's handbook full of items, for example, then like there's going to be stuff that the character gets that might not be useful or relevant. You know, you might have a situation where like one session, the number of rations you have is really important. And the next session, the number of rations you have doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm getting at is the having the an enemy that we had to fight in a different way, other than getting up to it and punching it. And then, I mean, those of us who have weapons use it. We, like me, I'm a weak character, so I cannot get into hand-to-hand combat. So I always just stay back.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice if that was more of an asset than a liability. And I felt like most of our combat sessions, it was, I mean, I could shoot arrows from afar, but that's all I could really do is hang back and shoot arrows and hope for the best.
Yeah, behind the curtain a little bit, I have multiple times tried to design combat scenarios that would be interesting for Hemo in particular and have roundly failed. Like, because I've felt that. Like, I could feel you, like, struggling to find, like, a purpose in the battle, Mike, and it's like, man, how do I loop Hemo in an interesting way? Or, like, put Hemo in danger? Like,
I think as Rangers level up, I become much more diverse, and it'll be easier, and it'll be more interesting. But early on, I just don't have a lot going for me. And some of that's a lot of my inexperience. A lot of it is,
But I'll tell you, something else that I noticed about this campaign is that Luke's combats got way more texture. I'm just about like the sort of setup, right? Not even the combat itself as we play it out, but the situation, the scenario got way more textured and way more intricate as it went on. Because at the beginning, there was one thing that was like, you go into a room and there's two goblins in a room, right? Which is like totally reasonable D&D combat that I've done many, many, many times. But by the end, we're dealing with, you know, things, hazards in the room and things that change and destructible, you know, terrain and things that, things that can be used against the party.
Old. I do think migrating to having a shared map, like, I'm ready to get way more crunchy with like tactical stuff, which maybe that's kind of the cure for.
And I think you'll find that once you start playing with maps, you'll start seeing opportunities to create situations. And from the player's standpoint, if the DM has decided in advance that there's a secret door that an ogre can come out of, and that happens depending on what goes on in the combat, versus if in the at the spur of the moment, the DM decides this combat is too easy, a secret door is going to open and an ogre comes out. From the player's perspective, those things are indistinguishable, right?
Oh, yes, yes. And I have done both frequently.
Okay. if I can offer one thing, this is not something that at any point made it drag, and this is not something that is like a critique. If anything, it is a compliment. You are incredibly generous with your yes and in everything we do. And you allow us very often to get into the weeds. And I for one, would like to welcome the opportunity for some no buts every once in a while. Because I feel like this is a particularly creative group. This is one of the most out of the box groups I have ever played with. And I don't ever want, personally, I don't ever want to put like onto your shoulders a situation that you feel you have to run with, but is just minutia and weird like tactics just to make it more complicated for you and everyone involved.
Yeah, I think the reason I have tended towards saying yes to the weird and wonderful things you guys come up with is because like I've been writing all this like larger picture stuff and I get to throw all this stuff at you. And those are moments where I see you guys having ideas and you're getting to kind of like get a hand on the ball in terms of shaping the world. So, but point taken, like I'm thinking of like the bugbear battle where Gebetto's like fucking out of like the kid in Hook going down the plant. Like I should have hurt you a lot for doing
that. I should have been unconscious, like, dude. Like,
yeah. So I guess it needs to be like, yes. And here is the negative thing.
Yeah.
But I guess like to that end, like I'm always concerned that I'm being a little too heavy-handed in like shaping the world around you guys. And I guess I don't know if it's the right thing to ask, but I personally would feel more comfortable if you guys shoved back a little more or like poked and prodded the things I put in front of you. Like, or I guess I'm not requesting that of you. I'm saying my comfort level with you doing that, like there's lots of headroom. Like when I put a silly thing or a strange thing in front, like fucking push back. And like the moments where that has happened, the story is better for it. So like, please, please, please push back.
I have one thought. I'm not sure how this could happen in terms of technology, but I think it would be cool if when we have those moments that are really individual, if we could like commit to those of us who aren't involved, like turning the volume down until that's resolved or something. So I know that sometimes I'm trying to forget that's something only Magnus knew.
Yeah. It
undoubtedly influences how I act moving forward. So I think
that's true.
Maybe because we aren't all in the same room, that's a benefit that this technology could have, is that we can all be like, okay, mute while you have this conversation with Magnus, and we all turn the volume off, and then there's some like symbol or something that we can.
Yeah.
Two ping pong paddles. One red, one green. Everyone.
Yeah.
Back when it's green.
I think something like that could be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah, I think I had thought of that and I shied away from it because like I was afraid of those things like totally like slamming the brakes on the momentum of the session. But I think now that we've got like so much time together under our belts, like I think we could weather that sort of thing more easily.
And I think along with that, it also should be somewhat time limited. Like, obviously, you don't want to spend 20 minutes on this one thing with this one person.
Yeah. Can I ask, can anyone think of moments where, like, basically, like, we were in a moment that you thought was cool and was going to be more than it was, and then we just, like, kind of moved on? Like, missed opportunities, basically?
That's a hard question for me, because I could endlessly dig into every corner of every room we go into. I could endlessly explore every town that we're in. Like, I am someone for whom like combat is not my favorite part of D&D. Like, I could spend endless time doing the other stuff.
I want to look around a lot.
All day. I feel like, yeah, Danielle, it's always you and I who are like, can I go look in this corner? Can I go look?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking for more character building. Like,
okay.
I thought I would progress a little more as a character than I've had the opportunity to. We briefly touched on my story with the elves when we were in High Lake.
Yeah.
But not much happened in terms of like my favorite terrain for most of the campaign. We were in cities, so right. It wasn't applicable to me. And then, yeah, I don't know. I guess I just thought being relatively new to 5th edition D&D, you know, one of the things I always thought about was, you know, the growing of it and evolving of character. For me,
yeah, no, I've been aware of that. Like, there is a lot of shit in the lore of this world for Hemo. Y'all just haven't wandered into it
yet. No.
Like, and I've been aware of the fact that it's like, I keep thinking of good Hemo stuff, but it has to be in like a part of the map they're not in right now. So yeah. Like, there's Hemo stuff out there. You just got to find it.
I think that's a really interesting point, though, and it bears on the fact that this is what they call a class and level game, right? Like, you have a class and a level, and. Yeah. To the extent that role-playing games are designed to model or simulate types of fiction, there are some kinds of fantasy fiction in which characters have level and some kinds in which they don't. Like a Campbellian hero's journey, like Lord of the Rings, I think you could say, is a story with level, where Frodo is weak and then he becomes stronger and then the story is over, right? Mm-hmm. But like the Conan the Barbarian stories or Fritz Leiber, like a bunch of sword and sorcery stories, are stories that don't have level in the sense that like the character is just going on funky adventures and doesn't really become more powerful or notable over the course of it. Mm. But this does have level, right?
Yeah,
so like we expect that not only will our characters like grow as sort of in the literary sense, like they'll become more meaningful and they'll have relationships with other characters and we'll learn more about them and about what makes them tick, but also like they become sort of grander. And they go, mm-hmm. like, 4th edition had this thing where there was the heroic tier and the paragon tier and the epic tier. And it was, like, 10 levels per tier, right? So a level 1 through 10 character was heroic, and a level 2 through, or 11 through 20 character was paragon, and 30, you know, up to 30 was epic. And those were associated with, like, different kinds of stories that you would tell. So, yeah, that's, like, a real challenge with running a D&D campaign is, like, how does the level of a character or the party correlate to what's going on in the story and to the growth of that character. And I think Hannah and I have tended to be the players who were most like aggro about sort of demanding character growth in like various ways, you know? And as a DM, it's hard to remember to pipeline that in unless the players are clamoring for it in the way that some of us were, you know?
Yeah. And I would say like, because there are a lot of you, I mean, like, you can also just say like, "Hey, I feel like I haven't gotten much chance to develop as you said, Mike. Like you could like, you know, text me or whatever and say like, "Hey, can we get something going for Hemo next section?" But like, that's totally fine. You can also, if you're in a session and like you know, if we're in a town, like part of the reason I don't label every single building in a town is so you can say, you know, I think my character is interested in this sort of thing in general. And then I'll like invent a place you can go or a person you could run into, or even not in a town. Like you, that is like, that's the kind of shove I like totally, totally welcome. Like if you shove me, I'll be like, oh, like, okay. let me throw you something. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I interrupted Ash. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say like in line with everything that was saying is like, there is like all kinds of stuff in the world. And like, this is not the end of this campaign. This is just the end of the first chapter of two chapters or however many. But like all of us that have gotten our personal stuff, it has happened because we went to a place that was significant for us. Mm-hmm. You know, like I strong-armed you guys into going into the mines. Pinlin went into, despite his better judgment, went back to the place where he committed a grievous crime. Alfrey has been chasing down his, you know, superior. Magnus returned to her hometown. Like it is hard to be passive and open to adventure and grow your character at the same time. It's kind of a like take it by the reins type of thing.
Sure.
And I think all of us were just very, very like, whatever, like, let's go for it. That sounds really cool.
It's actually like, I listened back to the very first session of like a month ago or something. And it cracks my shit up. Cause like almost everybody was like, well, I'm going to be kind of aloof. Oh, I'm also going to be aloof. But we can't all be aloof.
Standing in the same doorway, just casually
That's like everybody was like, I want to be like nearby, but not paying attention. Like kind of like I'm interested in other things, but keeping a watchful eye.
And we were in like three places, so there were like three of us, like multiple people at the same spot being aloof.
That session scared the shit out of me because it was like, I don't know what to do with this energy.
And this is, as has been said, an abnormally large party.
So
it is weird. It is weird to have this many people. And I mean, people have played D&D campaigns with a lot more, but the accounts that I've read of like early 80s D&D, where you have 10 people and four of them survive the first adventure, you know, this is not like that, right? Like this is something where Luke is really committed to like creating a compelling world and servicing all these characters and like having real sort of emotional stakes. I think it's fair to say like, doing that with this many players is really, really, really hard. And I think Luke has done like a phenomenal job at it. During
Thanks, man. I hope I've made it clear that as of this session, that none of you have plot armor. So
clearly not.
Yeah. And to be clear, Colin, we will have you roll up a new character for.
I was hoping you would let me keep playing with you.
Yeah.
This is your Zoom room. So.
Yeah.
Can we have group size?
I'm just gonna, this is too many players, so I'm just gonna kill a couple of you.
But I'm sure in the past somebody has been like, there's too many players, so I'm gonna deal with this social real world problem by killing somebody in the fiction of the game, and then everybody's gonna get really mad. Like that's the thing that like a DM in the 80s would do.
I know we've run over here, but if we could just real quick, I would love if we just for the benefit of like the game and like I always get to leave cliffhangers, so I would like to give you guys the opportunity to leave cliffhangers. Could we please do a lightning round where each of you asks a question that you were curious, like what is a question you're curious about in like the continuation of the campaign? And we won't give any answers, just if each person could give a question.
What's up with Tierney?
Yep, that's a good question.
Is Gebeto alive? I need to know.
Who is Glorfdwar?
Yes. Where are the rest of the artifacts? So we still don't know.
What is going on in the woods?
Yeah. I want to go to the woods next.
Can Pinland spend all his money?
Yeah.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Where is Sergio?
That's an excellent question.
Well, just to put a bow on it, thank you guys for creating this journey. This has been just a blast. And like, I went from like being a ball of anxiety about DMing this to like looking forward to it and feeling comfortable riffing with you guys and like being excited to see what you do. And it's just been lots and lots of fun.